Welcome to the last episode of 2020, our first full year of podcasting, broadcasting, coming to you on iTunes, iHeart, YouTube, Facebook. And what's the one you just spent a whole bunch
Pandora.
Of time? Pandora. You spent like
4 months
trying to get us on Pandora. Yeah. But we are now on, and we appreciate everybody that's listened, subscribed, liked, commented. It's been a fun year. We've got to experiment. We hope you enjoyed all the shows. Various types of shows. We did our conspiracy theory was a big hit. We did a couple of those, but mainly just talking about life and stuff that's important to us. And hopefully you've gleaned from that and can take the next step in your journey and in your life and become the best version of yourself. That's what we hope 2020's been for you. I know I've had my best year yet, and I'm looking forward to 2021 because the best is always yet to come. We're drinking some awesome fun, I don't know, is this product placement? Maybe they'll give us a bonus or something.
But potential sponsor is out there, I'm sure.
Joe and I like to experiment with different types of water, and you drank some black water the other day on your Facebook, but this is Icelandic glacial water with a pH of 8.4. I don't know, it's a natural spring water.
Yeah, it was sent to us by an Eskimo medicine man.
Yeah, I don't know what else is in it, but it has healing properties, and it costs $9. No, it's no, we just like to try different stuff. It tastes like water, in case you were wondering, but apparently is extra good for you. Well, we have a fun show today. We have a guest actually on via phone, and we're going to dive into talking about fear and doubt and some of those things that keep us from doing all the things that we were built to do. And so, Joe, why don't you introduce the topic, introduce the guest that you have with us, and we'll dive into the topic.
Okay. And so this is someone I've known for a number of years, and they're not a rookie by standards that they know about the law of attraction, and they're, you know, a follower of Christ, and they are, you know, very positive in spirit, but they've endured some hardships. Their family has not taken an easy path on this, and we've spoken on numerous occasions, and this is one of those topics where it's an ongoing thing, and it really is a fight. John, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right. So this is John Bevilacqua. He's calling from Florida, and he was an Ohio, Northeast Ohio guy.
Oh, he's in a free state. I like it.
Yeah. And then he moved down to Florida, and he opened a contracting company.
Nice.
And so he's a small business owner down there. So why don't you bring us up to speed, John, on how everything's going on down there with you?
Well, it's always been a battle. You know, I didn't start the company with large amount of money. I started the company with a Saturn and a ladder strapped to the roof, you know, and with remodeling fast food restaurants that way. You know, I got in with the guy. He really was impressed with my work, and that's where I started. From there, I grew a little bit. I got a bigger vehicle. I got more tools and more work from that same client. And that client, I think part of my problem was just relying on that client for most of my work. And it's always been hard to go with other clients for the reason that this particular client in commercial construction has a very fast turnaround for payments. And typically in commercial construction, you're waiting 60 to 90 days before you see a dime. When you're starting out, you're small, can't do that. You just can't. So it was hard for me to go and make new relationships with other contractors who had those type of setups. I did make relationships with those guys, and it always turned out to be a nightmare. I had to lean properties. I had to lean multi-million-dollar plazas for, you know, for a few thousand dollars that they didn't pay me. And it's just always been a struggle from that point. And at first, I've always had a lot of ambition. I go out. I would make new relationships. I would give it, you know, my best shot. And after a while, I just got burned out of it. I think it was a slow progression. And now I'm looking back and I'm going, I used to love this.
Wow.
And now I despise it. What happened between then and now that I've lost that fire, you know?
So Doug and I spend a lot of time in sort of like creating formulas that sort of it doesn't ensure you know, success on the end of it, but it's a fight where when you know you kind of feel like you're on your own little island, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially because everybody this year is, you know, that I know a lot of guys who are contractors. Everybody's going, I am booming. I can't keep up with, you know, the work. It's one of my best years ever. And over here, like, I haven't done, you know, any projects that are my bread and butter except for one job. You know, I've done some small things, but even the jobs that I did this year turned out to be nightmares. Mm. Nightmares.
All right, so John, what we call this is like when somebody who's out there, they're working it, they're hustling, they're doing all the right things, and they're looking for sort of the feedback from the world around them to let them know that they're doing okay. And the way that sort of our souls are built is that we get hardships to kind of develop us in areas. And I know that you have felt like you've been at the gym now for over a decade working on your soul, and it grates at you a little bit, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it wears you down, even for somebody who's tough and who's mentally strong. You know, in my industry, I've always been pretty, you know, emotionally and mentally strong when dealing with new clients and existing clients, and this year has really been a different one for sure. Not just because of the coronavirus, and a lot of people say, hey, listen, it's the coronavirus. Everybody's having a hard time. There was this problem before then. You know, I recognized the issue prior to the coronavirus. So I can say with confidence that this is not because of the coronavirus that this year has been the way it has.
So this program's topic is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That's what we're talking about here. And you came to mind right away when I have somebody who keeps getting trapped in the rut of that fear, uncertainty, doubt, because it feels like it's a never-ending cycle, because once you get a little momentum, something takes the air out of you, and then immediately your brain goes right to why me, and instead of saying, you know, because I mean, when you have other people, you have mentors, you have people that are alongside you, they can kind of like build you up a little bit and get you through those rough times.
Yeah.
So who do you have in your world to kind of keep you through that?
I have my fiance who she's pretty tough. She tells me when, you know, if I'm not thinking the right way, hey, maybe this was your fault. Maybe this was your doing, you know, and it gives me that opportunity to think about it that way and go, okay, you're right. Maybe let me think about it. Is it something I did? And this year, on the nightmare jobs, it wasn't anything that I did wrong. It was other people that didn't hold up their ends of contracts. You know, people who were supposed to work for me, window suppliers and material suppliers and things like that, who really made me look like I was a liar and a dishonest contractor, when I've always been honest and loyal in my business. And that's where it kind of got really bad this year. Was I had clients who I was giving everything to, and I had a window supplier who delayed this project for months and months, and at the same time the owners thinking that I never paid them the deposit. You know, I had to send them the email from the company. Hey, look, they sent me an email in July, you know, that I paid them for the windows, and they didn't install them until the end of October. And it was such a nightmare that, I mean, there were times where I was in tears, and I'm not going to lie. There was times where I was in tears because I felt like a failure, because I had so much self-doubt in myself. You know, that's where it put me.
On a practical level, John, it's nice to meet you, by the way, and glad you're on the show, and we're gonna have some fun, I think, over the next 45 minutes. But on a practical level, obviously you have the bottom line of the business, right? You have your, you got to make the bills. You got to have the window guys install. You need to be paid. You got to pay your guys. You have the bottom line in the business. But one of the things that Joe and I have said on the show kind of repeatedly, I have a philosophy as a leader that everything is my fault. As a father and as a husband, if I'm the leader in my home, everything's my fault. And yes, are there those things that are outside of my control? Absolutely. But as the leader in my organization, I hired that person, so therefore it's my fault. They may make decisions I don't like. You know, I set up, we just went through $500,000 renovation at our church, and there were subcontractors, and we kind of played the role of GC. So All of those guys flowed through my office. And so when somebody didn't show up or volunteers didn't do this, like, I didn't have anybody but myself to look at in the mirror. And I could have gotten frustrated and be like, oh, I'm not a construction guy. I'm not, you know, I'm just a pastor. I don't understand how, you know, some of this stuff works. But ultimately, when I, for me, when I grab a hold of it, good, bad, or the, or otherwise, on the other side of that ownership, I've always found a breakthrough. So even in a crappy year, when I own my issues, when I own what comes down, and don't pass the buck, it lets me step into a place where, cause it, for me, I know I end up in that victim spot where I'm like, well, they did that and this happened and so on. But when I take it and I own it, then I can flip it on its head and I put myself in the driver's seat to go, yep, that did happen, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to overcome it and do this. And it helps keep me in that positive state rather than go in that spot where I'm just getting my teeth kicked in and like, what the heck, what's next? You know, and then you start down that mental rabbit hole that sometimes people never come out of.
Yeah, that's kind of where I've been, is in the rabbit hole. But I mean, as far as taking responsibility that you're talking about, mm-hmm. I've always done, but you know, sometimes, I mean, it just seems, I have to take responsibility to the client. Yes, when it's the client, it's my responsibility. When I'm talking to the window guy, whoever it is in particular that time, mm-hmm. it's like, look, man, this is your problem. This is a problem that you have caused. And, you know, it was just a fight for months with these people.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's because, and they blame the coronavirus. It's the coronavirus, they can't get the materials from China, or the, you know, or whatever it is that they're trying to get from overseas, and it's held up because of that. And,
yeah.
You know, it was everybody's excuse.
I totally understand that. We just bought a new house in September, my wife and I, and we wanted a new living room set, and we were blessed. Some of our family members had provided some funds for us to be able to do that, and so we went out, and she was able to pick out kind of what we wanted, but then it was going to get delivered. It took 2 months because coronavirus, and they said the fabric and the factories in India and China doesn't get here, and we can't get you your sofas until December 17th, and then December 17th rolled around, and they called and said, sorry, it's going to be till February. I said, no, it's not, because you're going to cancel my order. So I went to the furniture store, Value City, and I said, cancel my order. They were like, no problem, canceled everything. And then my wife was like, what are we going to do for furniture? Like, if they're having a problem, everything. And I just looked at her, and I said, bottom line is, we're going to have furniture by Christmas. And I made a phone call to someone who I knew was in furniture, one of our guys at the church, and I said, hey, what do you have in stock? And immediately, within 3-4 days, we were able to switch that. And I know that's on a smaller scale. Obviously, you're you know, hiring out jobs, but so many people, you know, are using that. Like, you know, Value City was like, well, you know, we can't get it. Da da da. They didn't try and keep my business. They didn't try and convince me to stay with them. They didn't show me what they had in stock. They just signed the papers and gave me my money back. Didn't fight for that. And, but my wife was a little bit of a, she was like, at least we had something coming in February. And I was like, I am having sofas to sit on by Christmas. I will tell you right now, I am not sitting on our dining room chairs Christmas morning. We were going to have sofas. And, we went, the following Tuesday, to look at furniture. We had to drive 45 minutes to a store, but we went there, we picked out what we wanted. They delivered it 3 days later. And I was sitting on it last night watching, Vikings, which is a show we love. And, yeah. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, some of that stuff, yeah, you do run into that. But, I hate when what do you say?
I couldn't get a refund because they are paid the manufacturer.
Yeah.
When you hire a window company, hiring a salesman, they have the manufacturer who makes the windows, and they pay the manufacturer, and then the manufacturer, after he gets his down payment, tells them, hey, we're 16 weeks out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you run into problems. And there's, you know, from Florida, South Florida, I'm sure North Florida is a little better, but South Florida compared to Ohio, this was culture shock, at least for the first 2 or 3 years for me, because people are not the same. You know, there is the honesty and loyalty are a weakness in this area for most. I mean, at least in my business, honesty and loyalty are a weakness, it seems like. And I had people tell me who work for the large contractors that I work for. This is what they told me. Listen, you've always been honest and loyal to this company. And that's why they think you're weak. And that's why they hired the guys that were working for you for that job instead of you at a cheaper price. You know, things like that. And that those type of things happened this year also. It didn't go well for them. It went very bad that they hired this other guy. He didn't know what he was doing. He did work for me. I knew that he had to hold his hand and that he can't do it on his own. So I let that play out, and I got the following McDonald's remodel. And I just completed that one and had a problem with payment on that one. This company for the last 7 years have never missed a change order, ever. They've always paid it. Now, all of a sudden, coronavirus, people are hurting. They messed me up on that one, and they're not going to pay it. So there's nothing like there. And that's my bread and butter. I didn't burn the bridge. You know, I just walked out of their office and I said, okay, I signed the paper. I said, okay. And I just walked out because they may be calling me for another one. Do I want to burn that bridge? I don't know yet. I got to pray about it.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So, okay, we laid the groundwork, and I've paid attention to your story for a number of years. I mean, and honestly, John, I think the biggest problem is you're such a nice guy, and I don't think that everybody plays in the business world with that same kind of, compass, and I think that's a disadvantage. But I don't think it's going to make you lose this game. I think what you're doing is you're hardening a little bit. So now we have the groundwork of know where you came from. Like, what do you want? Like, what's your trajectory? If you put out the decision you're going to make that say, I'm laying the groundwork that I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm going to find success. I'm going with prosperity. I mean, what kind of stuff's coming out of your mouth when you set the rules?
For me right now is, and this is something I've been working on recently. I have interviews next week. I want to go work for a larger company as a construction manager. Down here, there's a large demand for it, so the pay is pretty good. And at the same time, I've been trading stocks and investing and doing that this year. The investing's going great, the trading not so much. If I can get that to work properly, I would like to just trade. I have a group of guys that I'm learning from who are really great. Their number one asset is risk management. They're fantastic at risk management. I mean, if there's one thing that you're going to be good at in the market, I think risk management is one of them. So,
all right, let me give you some advice, and I know it's going to feel good to kind of get off that bike and get onto a new fresh one, but you got some brokenness inside a little bit, and I don't want you to go to something else and then bring that with you. I'm gonna disagree with something you said on Facebook yesterday. So your comment on there, that I was disagreeing with it, right?
Which one was it?
where you said something about your truck and you said, well, I wasn't expecting this day to be terrible like this. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
Just tell me what happened there, because I want to disagree accurately.
Wait, with my car?
Yeah.
My wallet?
Yeah, that's it. You were in your, that's it. You lost your wallet. Go ahead and take me through that.
And I thought because, I'm at my sister's in Georgia. I'm actually not in Florida, visiting family in Georgia for the holiday. And nice. I got here on Monday night and I parked my vehicle, Sunday night, parked my vehicle, brought some stuff in, I had gifts and stuff. And when I'm driving my wallet, kind of on this little, I have the screen for the rear view camera and stuff. And my wallet is a perfect little ledge for my wallet to sit there. And I thought I had left it in the car because I could not find it Monday morning. And then I thought that somebody had stolen it. Somebody had gone in my car and stolen my wallet with my credit cards, all my, everything, all my information. And I'm pretty upset. We're asking the neighbors. They have cameras. They do have cameras. They go through their cameras. Two neighbors go through the cameras. They don't see anything other than me going out that night at 9:45 to get some other things out of the vehicle. And then the whole day I'm upset. We go to a Christmas thing with my nephew and my niece and my family. And I'm a grumpy one there. I was nice with the kids, and it was just right. I could have been in a better mood there. We're at the Christmas thing and I'm just grumpy because of this wallet. And we get back and I go to a gas station where I've gotten gas, and I see the guy pushing a cart with the garbage bags from the pumps. And I had thrown some stuff away. I had like a fast food cup or something. And I filled up just before coming to my sister. So I said, let's check at that gas station. The guy is wheeling the garbage to the dumpster. I wave him down. Stop. Let me look in those garbage bags to see if my wallet might be in those bags. I fished through the garbage. Luckily, he had gloves for me to wear. No luck. I come home again back to my sister's. I'm searching everywhere. Where didn't I look? I looked at my book bags already. The wallet is on the side pouch of the book bag in a black mesh pouch. And the wallet is black, so you couldn't see it. And along, that's where it was. At the same time, I'm cursed. You know, I'm all day going, I'm cursed. Why does this always happen? Everything always has to go wrong. I can't have one day where something just goes normal. And the wallet was right here.
That was my objection. Let me share with you sort of that programming. And I know you're venting. I know you're getting it out, but you're actually subscribing to things when you say stuff like that and controlling that those thoughts and that language. Have you read Think and Grow Rich?
I did years ago when I was in business in Ohio.
So there's a
read that again.
There's a part in Think and Grow Rich where you basically have two envelopes, and inside the envelopes, you have six things on the positive side and you have six things on the negative side. And when you go to the envelope with the six things on the positive side, you're basically harvesting the benefits of using optimism. And then when you go to the negative envelope and you shop from the six things on the negative, you're subscribing to all of the downside of pessimism. And so I want to read to you a couple of the things. And I used to carry an actual envelope, and I had the stuff written down on those things so that I could take it out every once in a while and make sure that I was shopping from the proper envelope. Because when things get shitty, it is so easy to go to that negative one and do the woe is me thing. It gets totally stuck in yourself.
Yeah. Well, and even in that process on a regular basis, like with not necessarily when things are not going well, an example this week. So, in the office, Pastor Mike and myself updated our phones, and we go to AT&T, and he keeps saying, you know, I couldn't get my phone backed up. Technology and me never agree. Everything always goes wrong with technology. We go to AT&T. My phone transfers, no problem. His phone has all kinds of problems. He's like, all I ever do is have problems with this and da 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 da. And then, the next day finally gets his phone all sorted out and finally, you know, return the old phone so that we get credit for it. And then we started having problems with some stuff in the sound system. And he's like, every time I touch something technological, it doesn't work. And I'm like, keep saying that, and it's going to keep not working.
Yeah, you think you're a narrator, but you're actually the manifestor. You're making that stuff happen.
Yep.
All right, so.
And I tell people that all the time. I correct people all the time. Hey, don't say that. Say something positive. But I don't follow my own advice. Half the time I'm like, but recently, you know, since we spoke the other day, Joe, my alarm is set every 3 hours. That alarm goes off.
Oh, that's good.
And every 3 hours, positive thoughts happen about what I want.
Boom.
Yeah.
That is awesome. All right. So let me read down my list. And this is something that you can, I would suggest, doing something. Like I'm stupid like you sometimes where I get into those funks and I literally need to give myself breadcrumbs to get me out of the funks. And this is one of the things that one of the protocols. This is a new updated version. The envelope version is kind of ratty and soiled, but all right. So the positive reward envelope has these six things: health, peace of mind, love of labor, free of fear and worry, positive attitude, and wealth. And each one of those things are on my vision board, and they're each represented by a feeling that when I invoke those feelings, it gives me like a sort of like a verb. Like these aren't just things I read and don't feel like doing anything about. Each one of these makes me want to go do something to help promote one of those six things. And then the negative and the penalty envelope is filled with ill health, fear and worry, indecision and doubt, frustration and discouragement, poverty and want, and envy, jealousy, and superstition. And so that is like a powerful thing for me because
is that from Think and Grow Rich? Yes. You just copied that down, yep, or is
exactly
that,
oh, I that didn't is know if from that was your... Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah. Yep. I was gonna say that list sounds super familiar. I didn't know if it was a Joe thing that I'd heard you say or if it came out of the book.
Very effective.
That's cool.
Yeah,
you should definitely. That book is awesome. I had actually saw some videos on Instagram and TikTok of people talking about Think and Grow Rich. So I ordered a copy, and then I was actually at Joe's house a month after I'd started reading. I was, two or three chapters in, and I go, "Have you ever heard of this book?" And he goes, "Have I heard of it?" And he had like a case in the back room, and he goes, "You ordered the wrong copy. I've got the right copy for you right here. This is the original," and gave me a new copy. So I still have the one that I bought and started reading, but then I've gone through since the original, and it's amazing to me, not just the stories that are in there, but the parallels to the faith world and following Jesus and all that stuff that, I preach and teach and do that. And Joe and I have some great conversations because he's come to faith from a very logical, scientific side of things. And so he'll say things and I'm like, "You don't realize what you're saying. Let me tell you the scripture that goes with what you're just saying." And we have some great conversations where we'll start laughing about stuff because he'll start talking and I'm like, "I don't think you understand fully what you're saying. I know you understand and you've seen this work in your life, but here's chapter and verse for where you're actually pulling that from."
It's such
whether
a cool
we're talking
thing.
Reaping and sowing, yeah, or whether we're talking about faith or whatever. And he doesn't even realize sometimes he's quoting Jesus. So
Yeah.
So, John, go ahead.
That in a lot of people who aren't Christians, I've noticed a lot of people who are successful and who are doing well, but they're not Christians, but they have like the qualities of a person who would be a follower. And then I look at myself and I'm like, I'm a follower. I pray for these things every day. And, why does that person have the favor and things continue to struggle for me? So I've tried to change that way of thinking. Like you say, I don't want to manifest that.
Yeah.
I want to manifest things.
Well, I think what's interesting, and I say this to Joe quite a bit, is the principles I think were built in at creation. I think they're universal. They weren't one set of universal principles for Christians and another set for non-Christians. They're just human principles. But we've been given a manual that's literally the hack to the system, but people don't bother to dig into it and really apply it. And so we get little nuggets in there, and we actually have... in that we don't have to learn it the hard way. Like Jesus spelled it out for us. This is how faith works. And this is how vision works. And this is how manifestation works. And this is how some of these things work. And you can literally, from Genesis to Revelation, these principles are laid out and they're universal. And so some people tap into them because they learned it in a self-help book or a mentor taught them, or they learned it the hard way, just in life that it worked.
Yeah, and some people have to go through that in order to get to their truth that way. And it's part of your metal being forged.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So John, the reason I asked you to come on the program is, we've done this for quite a bit, and I'd really like to start working with you again, and be your sort of hope coach, be Uber naggy at you when I see you spouting off stuff and programming, a bad day for the next day. Kind of get your language in check, your thoughts in check, and I'm not gonna, you orchestrate your goals and whatever, however that makes you happy. But when I see you sort of deviating and sort of injuring those efforts, I'm going to step in and do what I can to help. So I want you to lean on me over the next couple months and really take some value out of me wherever you need it. Do not be bashful about texting me or calling me or messaging me on Facebook. And I really want to see you bounce back from this. And no matter what path you're on, I really want to see you put something really good together.
I appreciate that, Joe. I certainly will do that. It's been a tough year, and I just wanted to turn around as well. Good things start to happen.
Oh, they're going to.
I'm just feeling. Yeah, they are. And you know what? A lot of people tell me that too. I mean, guys that work for me, everything, because they see the struggle and they go, you know what? I've had guys that barely even speak English. They tell me, good things are going to happen for you, John. Good things are going to happen for you. Okay. I said, I keep hearing that. That's what I told him. I said, I keep hearing that, but nothing happens. But now, you know, that was several weeks ago. Now I need to believe that as well.
That's right. We're going to have you believe in, that's for sure. And we're going to make this a regular segment so we can let our listeners see a real-world example of someone who, I would say, as your case, you actually have things that are working against you that are out of your control.
Yeah.
Most people are poisoning their water supply by choice. You're not even doing that. So you're going to be a great case to help educate the next generation of people who are just embarking. Like, there are people that just got started today, and through you, we're going to be able to help them.
That's good.
That would be awesome.
Okay, so we'll check in with you after the holiday. Do you have any more questions for us or need anything from us?
I think that's it. You just let me know when you want me to be on again, and we'll do it.
Okay, excellent. You have a Merry Christmas, John, and we'll see you after the new year.
Merry Christmas, John.
Merry Christmas.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Okay, I think that's super important. You know, just we get to help a real life soul out and make world easier.
I found out we were doing that 5 minutes ago. Joe said to me, "Hey, I have a friend that's going to be on the show. He'll be perfect for this segment." I'm like, "Great, we're bringing on an expert in this, and but we're going to help John, and,
yes, we are.
And I'm in." So
cool.
You know that I'm in.
All right. Awesome. Looks so, cool. You know, fear, uncertainty, doubt. Again, that's the first thing that popped into my brain because it is so easy to be tempted into feeling that your plight is harder than it really is.
Well, see, I actually, when we talk about uncertainty, I think that's probably the question marks for most people is what drives the fear and the doubt. When we don't know the outcome or we can't see, you know, what we're going to have. When we bought our house, I could walk around the house and I can see that wall that color and I could see my sofas in there and that vision muscle works easy for me. My wife, not so much. She's like, "I just don't know. I can't imagine this room looking different." And when you have that uncertainty, then you're like, "Well, is this the right house? And should we buy this out?" And then all that stuff follows that. And even in his situation, it's like, "Well, nothing went right for me this year. So you're uncertain about next year. Should I take that next contract? Should I take that next job?"
Well, here's the thing. Could you mind if I talk about the mechanics of this? I mean, it gets talk and listening to this really, sometimes you might have to help me translate this if I stray a little bit. But you're right. Decision is really what populates all those things. And people really struggle with that deciding thing. Okay. So there's three columns and I actually have a sheet that I fill out in the back when I do this, and I'm really a geek about this. So there's three columns. The first column is deciding, but deciding for the positive envelope. Mm-hmm. Then it's deciding for the negative envelope. And then there's total indecision where you don't know what you need. You don't know what you want. Yeah. You don't even know how to put that stuff together. So the mechanics is when you put up a goal, like, how do you sort through what your goals should even be? People don't know how to dream. They don't know how
to priorities, any of that stuff.
Right.
Well, and you talk about the word decision. We have so many people that are indecisive. That word decide comes from two Latin words, the D and the side, like suicide, homicide, etc. And it's the idea of, you have to kill all other options. When I've made a decision, I don't have a plan B. I only have one plan. And a lot of people make a decision halfway and they didn't really make a decision. You didn't kill all the other options. You've decided that I might do that. That's all you've done.
Because half of it's giving yourself an out that you don't have to.
Yep. And then if you give yourself an out, you'll take the out every time.
Every single time. And the generalities too, where instead of saying, "I'm going to hit the target, the bullseye," I'm going to shoot my arrow to the west, you know, and it's way easier to, you know, not corral yourself. Well, into an end.
So Monday, I was supposed to go to the gym in the morning, and Jed and Allie are getting ready to have a baby, and they had a long night or whatever. And he texted me that morning, said, "Hey, I'm not going to make it." And I immediately texted him back because I knew it was the right thing to do. Like, "Hey, I'm going anyway. Even if I just do cardio, I'm going to walk through those doors and I'm going to get on the elliptical for 30 minutes. And then I laid back in bed and 30 minutes went by. My wife's like, "Aren't you going to go to the gym?" I'm like, "Well, I don't have to meet anybody. So, you know, maybe I'll go a little later." And so I went to work dressed for the gym and did a couple things. And then 11:30 rolls around. I'm like, "You know what? I'll go at lunchtime. I can listen to Ben Shapiro. I put my AirPods in and get on the elliptical and I'll just go, since I don't have anybody to talk to and have a conversation. Because I'm at the gym for the social aspect. I happen to get the physical benefits. That's the way I'm wired."
Okay.
And so it's very difficult when I'm like, "All right, my social thing's cut off. So, but I was like, I'm going to go. And then 12 o'clock, I'm getting ready to go. And Pastor Mike comes in my office and says, hey, do you have 30 minutes? I'm like, yes, I do.
Come on in.
And we EQ'd my mic a little bit and he was playing with a couple things and took about 20 minutes maybe. And then I was like, all right, I need to do this. So I called my wife and I was like, look, I'm going to the gym. I'm going to do this. I pull up, I walked in, I did 30 minutes on the elliptical. And I went out, but man, I will tell you, I was giving myself every out to not go. And had I really wanted to, I give myself 3 or 4 outs of that. I have too much work to do. I have too much of this. I could go home and spend lunch with the kid. Like even good outs, if that makes sense. But ultimately I knew my top priority that day was I need to get 30 minutes of cardio in, period. And ultimately I did it, but
well, good job.
I totally understand that in a very real world sense. Yeah, and we do that across the board, whether it's in
when you've got some weakness, you got to flip that. And we have two sides of our brains, the imaginative side and the logical side. And what you did is you explored your imaginative side to get you out of going to the gym.
Oh, yeah.
When once you decide, like once you imagine what you want, use your imagination for deciding and then switch into logical mode. And then it's like 9 o'clock, go to the gym. You don't have a say in it at that point because you're just following a rule set that your imagination concocted for you.
Yeah. No, 100%. How do you help? I know we're going to do this very practically with John, but a lot of our listeners are thinking they're a victim and just, you know, it's just fate. This year is what happened. I lost my job. I had no control. There are certainly circumstances that are outside of our control, but there's always stuff inside of our control. And I think for most people, they arrive at that spot and they focus on everything they can't control rather than the three things they can. And uncertainty, fear, and doubt enter in when we deal with all the extras that we have no control over instead of I can control this and I can control this and I can control this. I can't control anything else. I've seen it with couples that they'll come in and they want me to fix, they have a list to fix their spouse. And I'm like, you don't have any control over that. I don't have any control over that. Here's the two things you can do for you.
Yep.
And that's it. Whether they leave you, whether they stay, whether you guys reconcile, bottom line is you have control of you. You can't change her or you can't change him. And so on. But convincing people that's tough because it's easier to give me a list for the other person than it is to focus on the two things you can control because then you're responsible for it. When I'm not responsible, I'm off the hook.
Right.
And so people love to not be responsible, whether it's in business, life, marriage, etc. It's always the other person's fault.
Yeah. And so what I basically do, and this is an advanced version of it, but you can start on this. So really your choices are time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a whole list of things, you're going to have some stuff you really want to do and you're going to have some stuff you don't really want to do. And if you arrange it in such a way, then you run out of time before you get to the stuff you don't want to do.
Hallelujah.
So it's easy. It's easy enough to flip that list.
Right.
Right. Because honestly, when you're in the chaos, there's nothing you're going to do. When John's stressed and angry and fearful and scared, right, he is not going to put together a practical list that, you know, whatever. But when things are calm, we usually piss away our calm time. The plan when you can really start to strategize and be reasonable about your strategy. And so if you take the calm times and make better use of it instead of pissing away watching the channels on the TV and stuff like that and arrange like, what do I want out of this month, out of this week? And then make a hierarchy of things that you want to get accomplished. Then when it's time to do it, you just go down your list the way that you set out.
Well, I think for most people, you settle for time management, but really it's energy management and doing your toughest jobs when you have the most focus to put into them and the stuff that you're good at and you can do on autopilot when you have down energy and figuring out where those flows are. Some people are morning people, their creative juices pump at 5 a.m. and so that's when they should get up and do their creative stuff.
Absolutely.
But like, you know, for me, I know afternoons, like, don't hand me a book, no, whatever. You'll be waking me up off the couch or in my desk chair. So I know I can't do big study time in the afternoon, maybe an hour. But if I do big study in the afternoon, it's over. So the afternoon, I want people. I want to do stuff where I'm moving. I want to, I save the, oh, hey, we need to, move all the chairs out of this room. And like stuff that's manual, I like to do in the afternoon just because it keeps me up and that keeps
my energy. Yeah, and that is a key because if you unlock the tumblers in your brain first thing, it your day flows where it makes so total sense and you do have, can get more done in those days.
Yeah, and you're more productive when you learn to manage your energy levels and not just your time.
Yeah, for sure.
So No, that's good. How do you navigate, you know, I know we're going to coach John through this, but for some of the people that are watching, they're in that victim space, fear, uncertainty, doubt, all those things kind of plague them. When they're rehearsing that, how do you become the disruptor in that rehearsal? Or is that something they have to do for themselves? You know, I think like somebody that does an intervention, like is there an intervention?
You need
for that,
an outside person, because you don't even know you're saying and doing the things that you're subscribing when you're doing it, because you're in that moment. I nag at my wife all the time and say, hey, that word that you just used. And I did that for years. And now she's doing it with Ryan. So it was effective.
You were saying she was about to turn back on you.
Catches me too. Yeah. But you really do need to have somebody who understands that when you say something like, oh, I always get in the longest line, or why does this stuff happen to me? You're manifesting that. You don't think it that you're controlling that, but you really are.
Yeah, the power of life and death is in your mouth, to quote a scripture for you.
See what that see how that works.
We're tandem here. It's good. What's something practical? Somebody listened to the call, connected with John's story a little bit, and said, you know, that's me. My whole world's been, there's been a bunch of stuff outside my control. Business has been crappy, COVID this, COVID that. How do we, what's something they can do that's practical today to help take that first step?
What he did was perfect. He said, all right, I'm stuck in a rut. Number one thing is I got to pick myself up, and I don't care where I land, just not in this rut. So if I have to go get a job over there to write myself and to create something clean, and I'll revisit this later, there is no shame in clearing off the desk and starting from scratch. That reset button is so valuable.
Yeah. And some people think, well, I can't hit it now because I'm 50. I can't hit it now because I've been in this career so long, or I can't hit it now, I'll lose. And everybody's afraid to push the chips to the middle of the table and say, you know what? Forget it. I've worked hard for these chips, but I'm all in. I'm out.
Yeah, that's evidence that you're in the first place. If you're that, you know, defensive about what you have, and you're that afraid of loss, I mean, you're dabbling in fear.
Yeah, I had a mentor early on with me that told me, if you can live with nothing to prove, nothing to lose, and nothing to hide, you'll be in such a healthy spot spiritually, physically, emotionally. Most people lose at life because they have something to prove. They have a chip on their shoulder, and so they'll go out and do some stuff that they wouldn't normally do. They'll play not to lose. I can't lose that. So as soon as you're afraid to lose something, it's over.
Yeah.
And as soon as you feel like, oh, I have to keep this hidden, people can never know this about me, or I have to be this way with these people, it's exhausting.
Yeah, but in that maxim is completely true. But most of the people that are in that spot know that they screwed something up, and they feel boxed in, that they don't have that option to be honest and to be forthcoming and to play that game. So hitting that reset button allows them to say, hey, these people in my life, they deserve to be on reset too, right? Because it is terrible to be able to live a life where you're constantly evading exposure, right? Yeah. There's no peace in that. And that's number one on my list.
Evading exposure. I like that. Yeah. And most people live that way though. They're constantly running from thing to thing, and they don't want this to be exposed, and they don't want that. And there's no peace in that. You're constantly running from fear to fear, hoping not to be found out.
Yeah. So hitting that reset button there gives you the ability to take down all of those things you're most fearful of and get them out of there. Because honestly, if you've got something that's going to make somebody bolt out of your life, regardless if they know about it yet, you already made that decision. You might as well finish serving the consequence and get right with things, right?
Wow.
So that it can be, sort of authentic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think kind of feel this, so I'm going to go with this. I don't know if this is what you want me to do, but if you're watching and you're like, man, that's cool that they're going to help John. I wish they would help me too. You can totally comment or message Youngstown Studio, or you can message Joe or myself. And we'd love to have you on to do a 10 or 15 minute segment, hear your story, and coach you through some of these things. We're the Hope Coaches. I like that. The Hope Coach.
Branding, baby.
Love it. As soon as you said it, I'm like, ooh, I like that. It goes a little bit. I'm kind of into the hope thing. I don't know if you know that.
No.
The whole goal of this show is not just for us to sit and pontificate about some stuff that's gone well for us or that we've learned, but is genuinely to help people. And if we can help you directly, we'd love to do that.
And we do it every day of our lives. So we would be in stride to be able to share sort of like the language and the understanding with you. Cause it's not difficult. I mean, honestly, you didn't think that you had to be an expert at something and have some degrees on the wall in order to pull this off. This is literally, something you fit on a sheet of paper.
Exactly. And anybody can do it. That's the whole thing. Like, I don't care if you're 15 or 50, to choose today that my life is going to change and going to be different. It starts with changing how you think. It starts with changing what you say. And they can start right now, like John mentioned, setting his alarm every 3 hours. Or, you know, you and I both have the vision boards, and we look at those every morning. And I have some scriptures on there. I have some stuff that, hey, this is what I'm believing for. And so I want that ingrained in me. And so I read it before when I wake up, and I read it before I go to bed. And so you have to have those routines and those things in place to reinforce the life that you're going after.
Yeah, and let me share a little bit of story, because this is my John story. So this is going to connect it, that if you're in John's position where you're doing all the right things, you're saying all the right stuff, you might get caught in the crossfire of just situation that was out of your control. So I started a computer business. I had no money. And so I started working at
spent the last of it on a soundboard at Radio Shack. We've told that story before.
So no, that was much later. I had absolutely no money. So I was working at an office supply store, and every penny that would come into the office supply store, I'd go and buy materials and whatever. So I ended up working like any minute that I wasn't at the office supply store, I was running my business and trying to get things started. So I got this client. It was amazing, right? I got a architect's firm, and they ordered 3 17-inch monitors. And at the time, 17-inch monitors were like $1,000 a piece, right? And so what I did is I got all the money that I had, and I bought these monitors, right? 3 monitors, $3,000 worth of equipment. I was so happy. I was on, right? And came in the next day, and my window in my office was busted out. And we had 3 brand new 17-inch monitors that were no longer in my office, right? I had no insurance, because if I didn't have enough money for anything, the insurance wasn't there. And I took my last like $400 or $500 that I had to my name, and I sat on the couch and I looked at the last $400 or $500. I said, "That's it. It's game over. I'm done. What am I gonna do? I owe these monitors."
How old were you at this time?
20 maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, and I literally thought that this was it.
Life's
and
done.
I sat on that couch and I said, F this, right? I decided in that moment that wasn't going to destroy me. I got off of the couch, stopped feeling sorry for myself, and I went and blasted it from that moment on, and I never looked back. That was the last time that I sat around and licked my wounds. But I could have sat there for another 2 weeks and said, oh, woe is me.
You could have sat there for the next 40 years.
Yes. Yeah. But I didn't. Thankfully, I got out of my misery really quick, and I started doing actions. Now, it wasn't easy right after that. I mean, of course, I had now less than zero money, and I still had to buy stupid monitors. I had a guy come to my house, because in part of the robbery, they stole a camera that was for a customer. The customer prepaid, used the customer's money to buy the camera, and now, and he kept calling me saying, hey, where's my camera? And I'm like, I'm working on it. Please just give me some time and whatever. And he tracks me down at my house, knocks on my door. He thinks I'm ripping him off by this point, because he gave me the money. He was not happy. So every minute beyond the whole break-in, I felt like an asshole every day. Like I was a shady, no good, whatever. So now that I came to grips with I was going to do it, I had everything in the world pummeling me, saying I was inadequate and I was terrible and I was dishonest and whatever. So I want to share that. Everybody goes through that.
Wow. It's good stuff. We're going to have fun, I think, with this topic. And I think we can help some people. And if you're in need of that help, whether it's on a business end or whether it's actually, in relationships or whatever, that's what we do on a number of different fronts. And it's a gift that God's given us. And so we'd like to share it with you if you're willing to be a part. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We will not see you again until 2021.
Woohoo!
Joe and I have completed one full year of podcasting. It's crazy to think that...
I think we did really well.
It was a bunch of fun.
And it matured, and it's really interesting. And
this thing's it's aging like a fine glass of wine. It's not aging like milk. It could age like milk.
It could, but it's not.
It's not going to curdle. It's good. Well, we love you guys. We hope you have a good Christmas. Drink some eggnog. Go see grandma. It's going to be good.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.